Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 74 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the second amendment podcast that has a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and this is a roundtable episode of the Assorted Calibers podcast. And I did not expect her, but she made an unexpected appearance, the lovely Erin Paulette. How you doing, Erin?
No one expects the Palette Inquisition. Our chief weapons are fabulousness and snark.
We have Henry Wadsworth Oddfellow.
Hello, everybody.
We have the wonderful, the mystical David.
Reading is fundamental.
And we have a man who goes by many names. And you know what? I didn't, before we started recording, ask you which one you would prefer. So, sir, state your name.
Sir, state your name.
What is your name?
Green.
What name by tonight, mystery guest?
I'll go by Owellowent.
Okay, this is Owellowent. We've talked about him by that name on many occasions. He's actually been behind the scenes on at least one that I could think of recording of the Assorted Calibers podcast show. And today he is here in speaking role. So how you doing tonight, Mr. Owellowent?
I am doing well. I've decided to partake in one of the libations you taught us on the show. It is the aviation using creme de violet.
Oh, you got nice. The creme de violet. I just recently acquired a bottle of that from a fan of Handgun Radio. He sent me a bottle of it. Like, man, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And I've had a chance to the first time I ever had it was in the bar atop the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. And the bartender was like, well, all right, you ordered an aviation. I love them, but how do you like them? And I'm like, I don't know. I've never had one. So he made me a traditional one. And then he made me his way, which is with Luxardo in the place of creme de violet. And both are very clearly aviations. One is not a bastardization of the other, but I would say that the creme de violet one, number one, has a more attractive color, and number two has a little bit more of a subtle flavor and a little bit more of a almost alien flavor, I could say, because that creme de violet, it tastes like nothing else.
And you know the annoying thing? I've actually started having issues finding Luxardo in the local liquor stores.
I might have caused that.
No.
The number of texts of people that I've got and Facebook posts of people that said, yeah, I grabbed a bottle of Luxardo at my local liquor store. It was covered in dust, but I've got it now.
Oh, I've had a couple liquor stores where they just straight up went, you want what? What is that? It's a Massachino cherry. It's a, what's that? Damn it. Yeah. So here's some cherry wine. So, no.
Now, I think I might have gotten the recipe wrong then, because the one that I found online called for both Luxardo and creme de violet.
Yep. Nope. Did I say Luxardo instead of Chambord? I meant Chambord.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the two words sound so similar. It's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah. I've been traveling all day, so.
Well, in fairness, yeah. it is, both of them are liquors that's just the, yeah, how much do I add to this drink? Not much.
Yep, just a little teeny tiny bit.
So he made one for me, and mm-hmm. I was intrigued. The thing is, your description of it doesn't really match what I had. It was sort of a very, very light purple, kind of cloudy. And it tasted more like a hard lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you said it tasted alien, like nothing else. And it's like,
all right. So that's a little thing that happens when you do a lot of tasting of a lot of different things. Like, you know, when you taste one whiskey versus another whiskey, you might say, oh, there's a lot of dark cherry, or there's a little bit of a black tea note to this, or this one's got more of a vanilla, you know, flavor, or this is extremely sweet. And when, you know, someone talks about like, oh, this bourbon is a very, very sweet bourbon. Bourbon's got no sugar in it whatsoever. It's pretty much just
ethanol, water, and trace elements. But there are notes that will trigger sweet receptors, though it's not like a rum that might actually have a little bit of sugar added to it, or a liqueur that is just straight up sugar syrup with alcohol in it. But because you've tasted a whole lot of whiskey, the flavor of the ethanol, the barrel flavor, the just all the basic stuff that make whiskey is just kind of a given in your mind, and you focus on what is different. And so, yeah, for those that don't know, an aviation is 2 ounces of gin, 1 ounce of lemon juice, half an ounce of Luxardo, which is maraschino liqueur, and a quarter ounce of either a Chambord, which is a raspberry liqueur, or
I thought you said ether for a moment instead of either.
Oh, devil ether. It makes you behave like the town drunk in an early Irish American novel. To quote Hunter Stockton Thompson. But yeah.
So
but essentially, when you taste the two back to back, you will note, you will ignore all the other stuff because the gin's the same, the lemon juice the same, Luxardo's the same. But now you've got this one different thing. And the creme de violet has just got a really, really, it's floral. There's some notes that taste kind of cough syrupy about it, but not necessarily in a bad way.
Yeah, I was about to say, it kind of reminds me of, I don't know, Dimetapp or Robitussin or something. If those things didn't taste medicine-y, alcohol-y.
Yeah.
And in fact, he just handed me about a fingerful of nothing but creme de violet, and I actually like that better.
Yeah,
it's straight. That's good.
It goes down easy.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, there's a weird alien quality to it. There's a floral note to it, though. I don't know what kind of violets they use. I get, like, in Maine, we get these like little purpley violets that pop up in our lawns. It's just weeds.
Could they be ultraviolets?
Oh, yes, David. Shots fired.
We've started already.
But they don't really have a particularly strong smell to them or anything like that. So they're just violet. So I really don't, it's not like I have a reference on the, oh, does it taste like violet smell? I really don't know what violets smell like to go for it, but there's a floral nature to it. It's a liqueur, so it's very sweet. There's some weird medicinal stuff. So yeah, it is good stuff. And of course, yeah, Erin's got quite the sweet tooth when it comes to her booze. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. So what shall we talk about today?
First, Erin, I thought you weren't going to be with us. Why did I think that?
Well, I wanted to give you the possibility in case I ran late, I was feeling tired, I couldn't make the connection.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was because of all the drinking he does.
All the drinking who does?
Weird. Why did I think that? Because you drink a lot.
Because six of one, half dozen of the other.
Okay. So, I have been in Orlando since Friday night. And I'm staying another night because I'm apparently in high demand. And Mr. Awolowant is doing me the very nice favor of letting me stay in his guest room, thereby saving me, I don't know, 4 or 5 days worth of hotel fees. So, yes, Operation Blazing Sword thanks him for his generosity. So, yes. On Saturday, we went to Orlando Pride, and I say this without fear of contradiction, I could not have done it without him. Because I had a 10x10 pavilion tent, and it is impossible for one person to set it up. It's difficult, but possible for two people to set it up. And we muddled through because the other person who was coming to help didn't show up and didn't answer her texts. And I haven't seen her on Facebook since Wednesday, and I hope she's okay. But she didn't show up, so it was just the two of us. But we were able to set up and run the booth, and he ran off to a class, and I handled it by myself, and he brought me dinner, and then we broke it down, and oh, breaking it down was a mess.
If you're concerned, do you know her zip code?
Well, I know her zip code, but that's it. I don't know where in Orlando she lives. But you know, I've talked about Pride before. This one really wasn't all that different. Had way more good interactions. Actually, I didn't have a single bad interaction. There were plenty of people who were like, oh, guns, not for me. And honestly, I can't ask for any better than that. We're all going to disagree about some things. And if they just say it's not for me and walk on, I'm cool with that. The only sort of negative interaction I had, and he wasn't here for this, but there was an older woman, by which I mean like 50s or 60s, maybe early 70s.
Shots fired.
Whatever. I mean, I didn't mean it like that, but if you want to take offense, you do you, babe. And so, you know, she had that look of every busybody old lady ever, where she had the graying hair and the tight curls, and her mouth was tightly pursed, like she was sucking on something sour and just, not happy. And
a full-grown Karen?
I guess. I mean, I know what you mean by a Karen, but I don't know what one of those fully grown would look like. It was just, not happy. No. And she was taking pictures of the booth, and you know, I had the Pink Pistols banner on one side and Blazing Sword on the other, and on the back, I had the banner, you know, talking about, you know, Operation Blazing Sword, be responsible or be safe, responsible firearms training, and it has the pictures of the two very attractive lesbians taken by Oleg Volk, one with the ammo belt as a bracelet, and the other holding the AR-15. You'll know what I'm talking about when you see it. And so that was our back banner, and she was taking all these pictures, and I'm like, yep, there you go.
Oh, yes.
That's not the banner, but that's the picture of the two lesbians. And, I mean, I think they're acting like it, but I don't care. I don't judge. And so she was taking these pictures, and I just sort of stepped aside to let her get a picture of the banner. And I said, do you want a picture of me? And she just walked off. And I don't know if she was trying to shame me or what. But anyway, as she turned to walk away, she had tucked under her arm one of those anti-gun banners, and I don't remember which one it was, but, you know, hashtag disarm. I think it was like disarm hate or something like that. I don't remember. And I don't know if she was taking these pictures to try and shame me or if she was just disgusted. But honestly, if you want to take pictures, you go for it. Because, well, if she shares them on social media and how disgusting it is, her friends are going to see it and they're going to share it. And I couldn't pay for that level of publicity. But what was really cool was that there was a gentleman who was next to her, and he came up after she stalked off. And he says, I was talking to her, and I said, Pink Pistols, wow, isn't that cool? And she told me, no, I think that's disgusting. So that was really the only negative interaction I had. Someone made a sour face at me, took some pictures, and I heard secondhand that I was disgusting. So that's way, way better than I thought I was going to get. I was honestly surprised that I didn't get thrown out of Pride. Maybe because my money was green and they needed it. I figure it's either that, or maybe they just didn't do their due diligence on what Operation Blazing Sword is, but either way, had a great time. No one gave me any problems.
You had a great time. Nobody gave you any problems. Maybe it's because nobody has any problems.
Yeah, could be. And
people keep telling us how unpopular gun ownership is and how we shouldn't do it and it should go away. But in reality, not as much as you think.
Well, yeah. And one of the things I expected people to be very upset. And how dare I be here because, you know, Pulse Massacre and I'm spitting on their memories and so on and so forth. And I not only did I not get that, but I want to say I had about a 70% success rate just in terms of people coming up. About half of them were, what is this? I've never heard of this. Free gun lessons for queer people? What? What's going on? I want to know more. And they were just intrigued by the prospect. Then you've got the people who were gun owners or police or something like that. And they came up and it was like, hell yeah, I'm glad you're doing this. Or, I am really surprised to see you here, but that's so good. And just had a lot of good, positive interactions. Now, Awelawant, you had what I thought was a very interesting observation, because this was your first Pride. So tell us what you noticed.
So another event I'd recently gone to was Dragon Con, and I got very, I guess, similar vibes. You had at Dragon Con, you get it's a kind of a geek convention that happens in Georgia every year between comic books and sci-fi and fantasy and role playing. And you get all people from all kinds of fandoms coming together and dressing up as their favorite characters or just getting into outfits they like. And everyone is just happy to be inclusive and belong, and they can let themselves be free to be who they are. So, yeah, I got a very similar vibe as Dragon Con, where it was just people were being free and felt like they could be themselves, and everyone is inclusive and friendly. And I saw some very fabulous costumes. Some were very ornate. Some were very creative. Not so much cosplay with specific characters like I saw at Dragon Con, but more of people expressing themselves in unique ways. So it's very interesting to see.
Yeah, it really was. Once he pointed that out, there's a fair amount of what I would call just queer cosplay. And
I can see that.
Some of them were just, wow, that's really nicely put together. I like that. There was one person we legitimately didn't know if that was just her personal style or if she was cosplaying someone from anime. And because I'm shameless, I called her over and, you know, come over here. So my friend was, you know, he was admiring your outfit and we wanted to know, and he's blushing furiously. And it turns out that's just her personal style. And she blushed when we complimented her on that. The other noteworthy thing that stands out is there was a statuesque woman, just looking like a goddess, bronzed skin, looked like she had come from Brazilian carnival with the headdress and the feathers and the not wearing very much, but what she was wearing was, you know, the gold lame, and she was also wearing the stilts.
Wow.
Yeah, and the stilts nice. had rainbow, not feathers, but the tinsel, I guess. And it was just...
Like streamers?
Sort of. But streamers are long, and it's like, okay, so that piece is red, and then that's blue, and then that's green, and then that's whatever. So it was just really remarkable, and I wanted to take a picture, and by the time I got my camera, she had gone by, but it was just, that is impressive, she is beautiful, the costume works, and anyone who can pull that off, both, you know, but physical appearance and striding around in those stilts like she was born in them. Just wow. So yeah, queer cosplay. I absolutely see it.
So how tall were these stilts? I mean, were they like she's walking around with her feet at shoulder height stilts or?
She was about 15 feet tall.
Holy smokes.
Wow.
So she had like 10-foot stilts.
Yeah, it's her feet were over my head.
I don't know how tall you are, but I'll assume about somewhere in the 5'8" to 6 foot range.
Yeah, I think he's low 6 feet. He's taller than I am. That's for sure.
Yeah, 5'11", 6 foot on a good day.
Yep.
Wow.
So yeah, there was that, and that was cool.
That is impressive.
And I don't know if Oddball was going to make a Dragon Con comment or not.
Oh, I was just going to say with Dragon Con, there is. I will say with Dragon Con, there is a Second Amendment Dragon Con goers who believe in Second Amendment, or I forget the name of the group, but something along those lines. They started up last year, and knowing some folks in security, security was told to. It's like, okay, these guys are having a meetup and we need to watch out for these guys and see what's going on. Now, also the security guys quickly agreed with me that, yeah, these are guys that are showing up for the same reason everybody else is showing up to have a damn good time. But that, you know, of course, on the other hand, Dragon Con is also the sci-fi convention that I ran into. I think it was DSA had a booth there a couple of years ago. So,
and by DSA
showing
you
off,
mean
they make AR-15s, and they also make basically it's like, oh, cool, you want an AR-15 or other assault rifle, but for costuming, okay, we will make a damn good inert version of it for you.
What's this company's name again?
DSA.
Okay, because I think isn't DSA the ones who made the recent batch of Israeli Galil imports?
They might have been. They were also the ones that got kicked out of San Diego Comic-Con, because they have insane rules about props that they can't look anything vaguely like weapons, to the point that no, if you want to dress up as Harley Quinn, you can't have a hammer or baseball bat.
That a big, man, ridiculous, obviously foam mallet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's not right.
So that was Saturday, and so setting up was pretty much a breeze, even though there was only two people, because they have over like 2,000 vendors, and they gave us a window in which we could come in, park on the street, offload, and then move the car. And so we had 8:30 to 9, and that was great. Didn't have too much of a problem, but getting it all done was a complete Charlie Foxtrot, because here I thought that, okay, it's time to break it down. They will get the people off the street, and the police will open the road, and we can come in one by one and break down our booths. And they didn't do that. And so the vendor market, the fair, the whatever, closed at 7, and traffic was horrible. I don't know if he wants to get into that or not, but it was really, really bad.
Yeah, trying to circle the lake just to get around to the entrance where we came in the morning to unload, I ran into 3 gridlocked intersections.
Yeah, and that was bad. And by the time he got there, he found out what I was told by event security, that the police weren't opening the road to vehicles until 9. So he had to park nearby, and we had to pack everything out on foot. And that was horrible! And it took us multiple trips. And he was hauling things to the car while I was breaking things down in order to keep an eye on things. And that was just... I'm told that's not how they did it last year. Hopefully next year they will unfornicate themselves. And so yesterday we were just tired, and we hung out and basically recovered, and we binge watched the first season of Poldark on Amazon Prime, which is surprisingly fun given that it's primarily a gigantic chick flick in series format.
It's a historical drama. My wife is. She watched the original one back in the 70s, and she's watching the new one. I think one of the initial draws was Aidan Turner.
Yes. Aidan Turner is one of those men where, okay, men don't turn me on, but all right, you're pretty enough. I'll look at you.
Ditto.
Well, go ahead. I think you're going to make a Hobbit reference.
I was going to say, for those who don't know who we're talking about, he played Keeley in The Hobbit.
Yes. Okay. He also played Keeley. Mitchell on the only good version of Being Human. There was no sci-fi version. There wasn't. But yeah.
Like there's only one Highlander movie?
Yes. And speaking of Highlander, Aidan Turner is very similar to Adrian Paul in that they both managed to be handsome and pretty at the same time, which is impressive.
Yeah.
So there was that, and wrapping up so that other people can talk. And so that brings us today, where I was interviewed by Alexandra Sisalong. I'm probably butchering her name. It's Czech. And so she said it very quickly. But she works for the, I believe it was the Orange County Oral History Museum. And she wanted to talk to me because I'm part of history. You know, the Pulse Massacre happened in Orange County, and I did something in response to that, Operation Blazing Sword, and she wanted me to talk. And so we were scheduled to talk for about 2 hours, and I ended up talking for over three. And nice. It's not just because I love to talk, but she kept asking me questions, and she really liked what I had to say. And she does that interview technique, which I think a lot of good interviewers do, where it's like you ask a question and get out of the way and let the guest talk. And I made it clear that I didn't have anywhere to be, so she just let me go until we ran out of material. And it was really great. I knew she was going to be friendly to me because she was introduced to me by her husband, and her husband is someone I know on Facebook, and I know he's pro-gun. I don't know that she's specifically pro-gun, but I know that she isn't anti-gun. And so there was no agenda to it. She just asked questions, and I talked. And for the first time, I used up all of my material. I was getting tired towards the end. And so I talked for close to 3 hours straight. And here I am talking again because I don't know any better. So it was really great. It was productive. And now, okay, this is actually, I think, worth a brag. I try not to brag. Weird keeps telling me I'm kind of a big deal. I'm actually part
of history.
I'm actually part of history now because I'm in a museum. My interview and my photograph is in a museum in Orange County, Florida. And so if you'll permit me a brief...
A well-earned whatever that noise was.
Because Aaron is a big freaking deal.
Mm. Right?
Aaron Paulette. She belongs in a museum.
That belongs in a museum.
Thank you, Dr. Jones.
I may end up dubbing in Dr. Jones into that one.
So I'm going to be quiet for a while to let other people talk.
I want to just say real quick on the, and I want to get too deep into it because that'll be for a later show. But Aaron introduced me to Dan Easterday from the suit Easterday versus the Village of Deerfield. And I interviewed him for the show, and it was exactly like that. I asked him a few questions. He gave his elevator speech, which was great and wonderful. And then it was one of those, okay, but I've got a few more questions. And then he gave some more answers, and then we're way over time, but I've got more questions. We just kept going and going and going. And then finally we cut the interview, and then we talked for like another 45 minutes.
Nice.
He's really a great guy. He is. I cannot speak higher of him, nor can he speak higher of Aaron Paulette, because also big deal.
Oh, thank you. Well, I want you to know that he had nothing but good things to say about you too.
Well, we are all friends. That's awesome.
It's mutual gentle caresses all around.
Oh, so he mentioned weird soft hands.
Yeah, so I'll just give a brief on mine. Is I just actually just got home. I got home a few hours ago, but I've just been running around since early this morning because we took a little long weekend. We're recording this on Columbus Day, and evidently not all the country celebrates this, but my neck of the woods does. And so my daughter had the day off school, so we went down to North Carolina, which is where my wife went to school, and hung out for the long weekend at a beach house in Carolina Beach with them. And they've got two kids, and my daughter got along with them extremely well. And yeah, a lot of sun, a lot of sand, a lot of sand castles, a lot of collecting shells, we're not taking all of these goddamn shells home. You got to give some to the ocean. And yeah, so we had a good time, but it was a long day of traveling because it is a hike from Carolina Beach to Raleigh, where the airport is, and then on the way back. And of course, the the whole trip went smoothly until like the day, the travel day home. We're driving and we're probably about 20 miles outside of Raleigh, and a truck kicks up a rock and it chips the windshield of our rental car.
Oh, it's rental.
And my wife is like going, "Oh God, what do we do about this? What do we do about this?" I'm like, "Look, we just roll with it. They deal with a million of these. Honestly speaking, that's one of those, like, talk to them and say, what do I do? They probably know more about it than I do." And then we got home, and on the way back, we parked in the parking garage at Logan, which costs a goddamn fortune. And I believe, in part because I'm just ready to get home, but also in part because I don't know what it is. For whatever reason, it's always the homeward trip into Logan, but my ears get plugged up and they don't pop for an astronomically large amount of time afterwards. I don't know why, but that was it. So I was partially deaf. It's one of the machines where you stick the parking ticket into the machine and it grabs the parking ticket. Then it asks for your credit card, and then it spits out the parking ticket. And then I walk away and don't discover until a few hours later that the credit card also got spat out, but after I was already going for that. So, yeah. Mm. Right now, the account is frozen. Hopefully, I'll get my card back so we won't have to redo everything. But either way, it's not a big deal. But it's just one of those, like, oh, come on. I just want to be home. So now I'm home. And, oh, my God, do I have a full house of a round table. So I am a happy camper. Who else has got something?
I've got a couple of things. We were going to talk about firearm related stuff.
Yes.
I bought a gun.
But I think that takes precedence.
Yeah, Oddball, talk about your gun.
So
keep it PG.
Your firearms too.
So a couple weeks ago at a gun show, I noticed that somebody was selling a police positive in 3220. For it was about $350, and I was being good, and my wife.
We heard that.
That was the week I didn't buy a gun.
The week, the other 51 weeks, he was not so good.
Well, you know, I heeded my wife's directions and didn't buy the gun, and came home and was talking to folks, and including I believe I talked to David a little bit about it, and I know I talked to Weird about it, who just sure said, what were you doing? You should have bought the gun. What
I would have bought.
And fortunately there was a another gun show the next week, and I went in and saw the guy with the 3220, and also saw somebody for $300 had a police positive in 38 special in damn good condition.
Yeah, and how much was the one in 3220?
$350.
Yeah, so you not only saved $50 in the price of the gun, but you saved a lot of money over the years in ammunition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was one of the things that I quickly went, wait, I can get this one for a little bit cheaper in ammo that I don't have to search for.
Yeah.
But Robert Johnson didn't write an amazing blues song about the ammo for the 38 special. Well, it actually talked about 38 special, it being not as good as 3220.
I'm sure you already know this, but for anyone listening, do not shoot any plus P ammunition in that, right? That handgun.
Oh, yeah. No. Talking to David before the show, looking at the serial numbers. Yeah, this is this is one of the early ones in 38 special.
Yes, the police positive special. Well, actually, the police positive was introduced in 1907 in 38 Smith & Wesson and 38 special. Production ran concurrently, 38 Smith & Wesson ending at the end of World War II, 38 special continuing on into the 70s. And Oddball, you found out yours was made when?
1910.
Yeah.
And the only spot that I really see that there is an issue with the finish on it Well, there's hilariously, there's two spots. One is where the bare metal is around the handle, because this is one of the early ones that still has the hard black rubber instead of wood.
The later.
So there is, you know, a little bit of surface rust where, you know, people where the previous owners have handled it, et cetera, and worn the finish away.
We prefer to call that patina.
Yeah, I would call this patina.
It's or browning.
It's a little bit rougher than what I usually call patina, but it's in that neck of the woods.
Yep. And just to put things in perspective for people regarding the cartridge, when this gun was introduced, 1907, a lot of changes were going on. When Oddball's gun was manufactured, those changes were still ongoing. And in fact, the year that Oddball's gun was made, the 38 Special cartridge was only 12 years old.
Yeah. And the other spot is there's a spot in between the crane and the cutout right at the serial number that the lockup is tight enough. A reverse image of the first two serial numbers on the opposing metal side.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's not uncommon. We were talking about this earlier, is when the punch is into the metal, it raises a slight ridge around the end. And these guns are so beautifully and tightly fitted that every time the crane is closed to close the cylinder, it's basically very lightly stamping that raised ridge of metal onto the opposite side of the connection. And that it shows the care that went into the fitting.
Oh yeah, the seam when it's closed up, you actually have to look pretty closely to see that. No, that's actually two pieces of metal, not just one.
Mm-hmm. Probably the same with the side plate.
Yeah,
just a faint line where the side plate joins the frame.
Yeah the side plate is raised up just a
you can catch it with your fingernail, but you can't really feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love those old revolvers. They really were works of art.
All right. Well, good job. This is not an episode of Handgun Radio. Do we want to dive into Second Amendment news?
Hi, my name is David. I like old revolvers.
Yeah, we're losing Aaron.
All right.
But she's not wrong. My name is David, and I do love old revolvers.
So in terms of Second Amendment news, this isn't... Okay, this isn't really worth debating. This is just, I saw this and it's funny and it's noteworthy. So ABC News on its flagship World News Tonight.
I was
going to
bring this up.
Oh, hell.
Well, is it okay if I do it or do you really want to lead into it?
No, Aaron, dive right into it, please.
Okay. So ABC News on its World News Tonight, you know, the 6 o'clock or 6:30 news for those of us on the East Coast. They were talking about Syria and how, you know, the terrible firefights with the Kurds and so on and so forth, and talking in breathless tones about the massacres, and they're showing footage of machine gun fire, and to the average viewer, it's, oh my God, those poor people are being killed, whereas gun owners are going, wait just a cotton pick and second. That's footage from the Knob Creek night machine gun shoot.
Yep. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Literally, I just before the show kicked on, I went, "Oh, I need to look at this because I think this might be worth talking about." And I heard using video, like all the headlines are using video of a range in Tennessee, and I didn't.
Well, they missed, but it's close.
Yeah, I think they did say Tennessee in the.
I wish.
This one says Kentucky,
it's not far from the border.
Yeah,
no, but if not, they specifically state just the other side of the Tennessee Kentucky border, it would be like 40 minutes from my house.
Well, there's that.
Instead of almost 3 hours.
But just, either way, they needed the state of it, and I didn't connect, you know, the two and two together that, you know, Knob Creek obviously is in Kentucky on account of the bourbon, and as soon as I pushed play on the video and saw the tracer fire, I went, oh God, that's the Knob Creek night shoot.
Yeah.
Just all oh, the okay.
It- get together and go, hey, let's load up a whole bunch of tracers and turn a whole bunch of money into smoke and noise.
Okay. Yep. They're just outside of, okay. I was thinking that they were closer to the border than that for some reason.
Sadly, no. So it's a week. It's an overnight trip instead of a day trip.
Yeah. So like,
or it hilarious. Will be
machine gun nerds often mistaken for major military forces.
Layers and layers of editorial oversight.
In their defense, I'm sorry. What was that?
Layers and layers of editorial oversight.
Yes, but in their
defense. I want to hear the in their defense, David, because this is going to be a bold ass statement, no matter what you say.
To be fair,
in their defense of the folks at Knob Creek, they do have more machine guns than a lot of militaries.
Yeah, there is that.
In not their defense, how in the blue hell, this is a round table, not a mag dump, so I can't say what I want to say, but how in the hell did they acquire footage of the Knob Creek machine gun night shoot that I would assume was in its entirety that they cut down, unless I'm really hoping
that it was a troll.
Oh, I have one better for you. I recently saw an article talking about Russian military, and I think it was actually World War II Russian military, and the cover picture that they used was a rather famous picture of Simo Hiya.
Oh God!
Wait, what?
The White Death.
I know who Simo Hiya is. I don't think. Could you repeat that?
Yeah. It was an article about World War II Russian military.
Well, to be fair, he did kill a lot of them.
He saw a lot of them. Yeah, that's true.
Yes, but
and bits of his rifle were made in Russia.
This is also true.
For those who don't know who Simo or Simo Hiya is, he was a Finnish sniper, also known as the White Death, because the Russians got scared when the snowbank started speaking in Finnish.
he is the patron saint of riflery in Finland.
Yeah, and he killed a bajillion. I don't even want to guess on the. I want to guess the kill count number because I'm going to horribly understate it.
Oh yeah, according to Wikipedia, he is believed to have killed over 500.
Yeah, I believe the confirmed number is over 300.
Yeah, but he mowed down a hell of a lot of them with a Suomi, and there weren't other people watching. So
the best part is how he sniped them.
Oh, which rifle he used?
Well,
no.
Okay, that's all right. Fine, I'll take this since no one else wants to follow my lead. Okay, so not only did he shoot them with the Finnish model of the Mosin Nagant, yay Mosin, the rifle that went to war with itself and won, but here's the thing: all of his hits were done through iron sights, no optics.
Yes. Yep.
And
he did not like the scopes of the time because they tended to fog up.
Yeah, they weren't nitrogen filled, so they would fog up. And so all of his kills were done through iron sights. This man was so tough that two miners. First of all, the Russians, they got so scared of him that when they thought he was in the area, they called in artillery strikes on him. And that didn't work. He was finally shot by another sniper. I don't remember who. Didn't kill him, but it blew off part of his jaw. The man was so tough, he fell into a coma. He didn't die, and he woke up. I think, as the story goes, he woke up the day the Winter War was over.
Yes.
He then went on to teach sniping to members of the Finnish army, and then eventually retired to like live in the country with his dog, and he died at a ripe old age. And
he died on April 1st, which I've got to imagine that the Russians were like, "It's April 1st. This can't be true.
It's a fake." He died
April 1st, 2002, at the age of 96.
Yeah, yep. I mean, just tough. And if you've seen the picture of him after, I mean, he's obviously had reconstructive surgery, but you can tell it just tore the hell out of his jaw. But he kept going, and he lived to a ripe old age, and that was a life well spent. I would have loved to have, you know, bought him a bottle of Aquavit or whatever the Finns drink, and it's just, let's just press play. This is going to be gold no matter what you say.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole, yeah, live by the sword, die by the sword crap is very, very much a poetic and meaningless line. Especially when it comes to just us Second Amendment enthusiasts, because let me tell you, Jeff Cooper was also in his 90s when he finally shuffled off this mortal coil, and he died comfortably in his bed, surrounded by loved ones, the way I hope we all end up passing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is awesome.
But yeah, no, for ABC to publish this, this video. There's no way this was not done with, at best, just no one will know, just like insulting amounts of laziness is the absolute best story. The other one is
layers just, and layers of oversight.
Yeah, or at worst, like, this is just straight up, we want to make this story horrendous, so let's find the most like gross display of force, which is literally a bunch of people that have enough money to have multiple machine guns showing off at how much money they have at Knob Creek once a year.
With the amount of fires
and tannerite they can put down range.
Yeah, that's the machine gun equivalent of a mad minute.
I think the only thing I can think of that is worse is when, I don't think it was ABC, but a major news source, maybe it's NBC, passed off a 12-gauge shotgun shooting a watermelon as an AR-15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Aaron, that reminds me real quick as a callback for episode 73. You were asking about the watermelons, and actually I was on the plane ride home. I was reading Dr. Faria's book, and he had a reference to it, and there was a doctor that I'll put it in the show notes, the information for it, because I've got the footnote, because he wrote an amazing book. Seriously, everyone needs to look up this book. It is great. But yeah, there was a doctor who wanted to use watermelons as a means to show the destructive power of assault weapons, and said that the watermelon was a fine sit-in for a human skull. Yeah.
I can't even address that. I just can't.
Yeah. So that's where the watermelon thing's. But yeah, no, I love the power of the AR-15 and someone launching a slug from a 12-gauge through a watermelon. Good times.
Yeah. Good times indeed. Now on to not so good times. I'm sure everyone's familiar with the news report about the young woman in Fort Worth, Texas, who was shot and killed through the doorway. She was playing video games with her nephew, and the cop basically showed up and shot her.
Oh, heck no. I hadn't heard about that.
I've heard bits and pieces of it. I haven't actually had a chance to chase down the story. So
yeah, okay. I mean, I've been very busy. I heard that something happened in Fort Worth, but... Yeah. Yeah, okay, I've been too busy doing stuff in order to look it up. So I guess this is it.
So I don't have all the details because, of course, no one has all the details because it's an ongoing investigation. But what has been reported from several sources is that this young woman, I'm going to horribly mangle her name, and I apologize to her family, Atatiana Jefferson, she was at her sister's house babysitting her 8-year-old nephew. They were playing video games, and it was hot, so they had the door open for ventilation, and one of the neighbors called in for a welfare check because they saw the door standing open. Police officers showed up, investigated around the outside of the house, came to the door, didn't identify himself. She came to the door. He barked out some command. She pretty much said what, and he shot her. And then later, officers went inside the house and found in the bedroom a handgun and said, and were looking to use that to justify, or that was the assumption, they were looking to use that to justify the shoot. Well, the latest news is that the Fort Worth police officer who shot and killed her has been charged with murder.
Good.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And just as a reminder, I believe that Texas still does have the death penalty for murder.
Yes, it does.
I believe they have an express line, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Isn't Texas the same place where we had a very similar problem with the police officer who walked into the wrong apartment and shot a man sitting on his couch eating ice cream?
That yes, was Dallas, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the sister city to Fort Worth. It's the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. But yeah. She was also charged with...
Charged with and convicted.
Well, so here's how I understand it. But
not murder.
Just let me talk. I am not an expert, but here's what I understand from it. I believe she was originally going to be charged with manslaughter. But someone on her defense team, or maybe her, thought that they could use a stand your ground defense because she thought she was in her own apartment. And
yes, they tried to use castle doctrine.
Right. And a key component of this defense is stating, yes, I shot him. Yes, I intended to shoot him. Anyone who has taken Andrew Branca's Law of Self-Defense, you know, in order to make that defense, you are confessing to the homicide. Not all homicides are murders. Homicide means killing a human being. And so in order to use that defense, you must first state, essentially, you're darn right I killed him. Followed immediately by, and I was justified, and here's why. And so because she couldn't prove the justification, she was convicted of murder. Now, I don't think what she did was murder. I think it was supremely bad judgment. It was manslaughter at best. But she took her chances and she chose poorly. So that's what she was convicted for.
So she was convicted of murder?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. And I couldn't remember that detail.
Oh, what, yes. And the general consensus...
Yeah, I think she got, what was it, 10 years?
That sounds about right. The general consensus seems to be, okay, that's harsh, but, well, one, what was the defense thinking? And two, you know, it's kind of nice to see the cops being held to the same standard we'd be held to.
Yeah, qualified immunity only applies in certain circumstances.
So, yeah, it kind of sounds like Texas is having a shoot first, ask questions later problem.
Ask questions during your trial.
Yeah. Well, if it keeps going this way, because it sounds like this guy's going to be facing the music, and I think, again, the Amber Geiger case, she was essentially one floor away from her apartment. This person lived either directly above or directly below her. I'm not going to look into the details exactly, but essentially she parked on a different level of the parking garage after her shift. She claimed to be very tired. And honestly speaking, it seems like evidence points out her being very tired. And given that there's no like, wowie zowies, this is strange. I heard some weird conspiracy theories when the story first broke, but when the trial went through, I didn't hear anything going on that she just parked at a different level of the parking garage than she normally did. And so therefore got off on the wrong floor.
She was on autopilot basically.
Yeah. And then went to her apartment. For all I know, she stuck her key in the door, but this gentleman left the door unlocked. And so she walked into an apartment and there was somebody in her apartment, what she thought was her apartment, and she shot and killed them. And I don't know if there was a furtive gesture or if she had any justification other than the person's in your apartment. So therefore, I mean, I'm pretty sure Texas has a castle doctrine. So in theory, that's kind of a clean shoot. I'm not going to get into it. And I'm also not in the mood of
those details.
Yeah. Honestly, Massachusetts actually has a castle doctrine as well. And I'll just say right now, if I can have the guy run away and save the carpet cleaning and extra paperwork, I will.
Right.
That's just me. Is the shooting bad guys is shooting bad guys. but if a bad guy's willing to run away, he's not as bad as some of the other bad guys.
So, yeah, and I will say that I have done exactly what she did of the, I wasn't really paying attention, and I walked up two flights of stairs instead of three flights of stairs and walked into the wrong apartment. Now, I looked around and quickly realized, wait, this isn't my stuff, and quietly and quickly stepped out of that apartment.
I actually did the exact same thing. Actually, over my travels, I took one step too far on autopilot and almost walked into the ladies' bathroom instead of the men's bathroom, but quickly saw the large dress-wearing lady figure. And there was actually another lady walking out. And so it was, I had not quite committed a faux pas, but yeah, totally on autopilot. And I misread the way the men's room sign was hung. It looked like it was for the next opening instead of, because it was one of those like big wide open, no door.
So it wasn't well hung, is what you're saying. The men's room sign wasn't well hung.
And then I also,
I had the same thing, except I was not nearly as lucky as you.
Yeah.
I was in, it was an office building, and it was like odd floors had men's room, even floors had ladies' room at this spot. Oh, I've been there.
Yeah.
And I was there doing training, and I got out, and just because they'd moved things around, I was on the wrong floor. And so I walked in, and it wasn't until I saw that there were no urinals that I realized I had made a mistake.
Uh-huh.
So I walked out. Luckily, there was no one in the bathroom, or if they were, they were in a stall and very quiet. But I walked out just a few seconds before a woman was entering. So I walked out and was like, oh, hi, wrong room. Not embarrassing at all.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Adam.
Go ahead.
I did it once at a swim meet on the, I had my glasses off because I was, you know, swimming in a pool. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, this swimming pool did not label the locker rooms from the pool side. And so I actually was talking to somebody else who it was probably like a coach or a family member or somebody. And then I turned around and the whole team had already gone into the locker room. And so I went to the door that I thought I came in from, and this is another school's pool.
Mm.
And opened up a door directly into the women's shower. And we got greeted with
screams. A lot of movies start off that way.
Yeah. And I will say right now, teenage me is very upset that my vision, that part of this was because my vision was horrible, that unfortunately I realized that I opened the door into the women's shower. I had nothing else to work on there. So if you are the lady that saw me open the door and let out that warning scream, I did not. Your virtue was intact that day.
To the Knob Creek gun range thing for a moment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Knob Creek posted online, "We'd like to thank ABC News for the free advertising on our biannual machine gun shoot and military gun show. Keep up the good work, ABC News, and a big thanks to our patrons and spectators for taking notice and notifying us of their big mistake."
Is the mistake in scare quotes?
Yes. And then it lists the next show dates.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, with that case, there is the thing of, I do have to think, you know, what if it had been one of us, you know, a Joe Blow concealed carry guy that walked into the wrong apartment and shot the dude that was sitting in his home eating ice cream and then said, oh, I thought this was my place.
Death penalty.
First thing you get.
She was saying, why is the first thing you do is pull out a gun and shoot somebody? And
exactly.
Yeah, it's
valid point. If I walk into my house, what I think is my apartment, when I live in an apartment, and I see someone sitting on a couch, I would like to think that's not my couch. And even if the apartments are laid out identical, the chance of them having the same upholstery, the same artwork, I mean, the whole gestalt of the room should have been different.
Right. Or at least your first response would be WTF, mate.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it happened twice on this vacation. We were getting some sweet, sweet hate chicken. And so much my daughter was requesting, I want to go to Chick-fil-A. I don't want to go here.
Yeah.
So yeah, take that, haters. But my, we happened to go to this one Chick-fil-A, and boy, they had the air conditioning cranked up to meat locker. And my daughter's going, I am so cold. I'm like, you know what? I'll go get your sweatshirt. So I went to the, to the car. I pushed the, and note, this is a rental car. I pushed the door unlock button and walk up to the car and open the back door and go, geez, what is all this crap in the back seat? We didn't pack this much stuff. What? There's a towel and there's this or that.
It was a hitchhiker's car. There was a towel. And, you knew where it was.
And realized it happened to be that it was, I mean, and then I actually looked over and saw that it was a Ford, not a Kia, which is what we rented. It could have also been the fact that it was either an Edge or an Escape. So it was very, very close to the car that I normally drive. But it was the same color as the car that I rented. Mm-hmm. And so I looked over, I saw the blue oval on the steering wheel and realized, oh yeah, that's why this car that has a very similar child seat in the back and all that has all sorts of stuff that I don't remember us having. This isn't my car. And luckily nobody saw me rummaging through their car looking for a child sweatshirt that wasn't in there. And then I just quickly moved down. It was in the next set of bays of parking. It was exactly it. It was parked in the exact spot, but one bay over from my car. And so, yeah, I could definitely see that. But I would also like to think that, yeah, if I even walked into an apartment that I thought was mine and saw somebody in there, I would say, I mean, yeah, I would like to think that my first gesture is, what the hell are you doing in my apartment? And then realize
this is not my apartment.
Yeah, and
beautiful life.
At no point is this getting violent. This is just getting weird.
Hi,
so
neighbor.
I wouldn't draw the gun. At worst case scenario, I would draw the gun and go, I'm not going to shoot a dude sitting on a couch eating ice cream. I might tell him to keep his hands where I can see him. And then afterwards, I'm going to have some real interesting explaining to do and probably get the book thrown at me. I might lose my carry permit for drawing a gun and not shooting somebody.
Jim?
Yeah, well, just remember, after the first felony, the rest are free.
Let me just put it this way. This is another reason why, like, people always used to say, hey, man, what are you doing? Like, I'd go into my dorm room and someone would try to come in after talking to me and they'd be like, hey man, what are you doing? Your dorm room door is locked. Cause yeah, it was just always locked. And just like, why did you do that? Just better to have it always locked than have it always unlocked.
I was born and raised in New York City. The door is locked unless you're going through it.
Yeah,
pretty much.
That is what it is.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my wife also feels the same way. Otherwise,
If I'm puttering around the house, if I'm going in and out and all that, I will leave the door unlocked because let's face it, I don't want to reach for the keys every single time I go in and out and in and out and out. But yeah. Otherwise, oh yeah, no. If I shut a door behind me, oh yeah, I'm just gonna throw the lock because yeah, what's the this is one of those nice things of the you also occasionally hear about the person that. Which I am a bit confused on because as someone who enjoys a drink, I have never been like so schmammered that I've walked into the wrong house and just started to go to bed. though at the same time, I did have a friend that lived in one of those housing developments that had like 35 houses all in one spot that all look exactly the same.
Yeah.
That's a version of hell for me.
Yeah, in which case I'm going to quickly get a giant mold and make a concrete duck in my front yard.
Nice.
So nice.
That's my ducking house.
So there's actually a Russian comedy which makes use of this trope, and apparently they watch it every New Year's Eve, sort of like our tradition is to watch It's a Wonderful Life at Christmas. And I don't remember the specifics. I've never seen it. But the idea is that You know, there is a young, and this is Soviet era, by the way. That's important.
Very important. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a young man. He works in a particular city, and he ends up in another city. And I honestly don't remember if he like falls asleep on the train or if he's going there for business. But for whatever reason, he's exhausted. He walks into a building in a different city, walks up the stairs to the apartment. The key works. He goes in. He falls asleep on the couch because he's hungover, probably as a result of New Year's Eve. And he's actually in the apartment of a young woman who sees him, and hijinks ensue. And the vast majority of the hijinks, they're talking about how everything in Soviet Russia is nearly identical, that, yeah. You know, you go to a different city, you go to a different apartment building, but the key, because everything is so standardized, the key mm-hmm. works, and the couch is in the same place, and it's almost
it's
like
the same couch, it's a state-issued couch.
Yeah, it's like, and so these are two different people, but living very similar lives, and what the heck. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember how it ends, I they probably fall in love or something. But yeah,
it's Soviet era Russia. Probably one informs on the other.
Maybe I don't remember, but I was just tickled by the notion that they just embraced the trope of yes, we go to another city, key still works, everything's identical. Yeah, you know. Yep.
Yeah, you mentioned It's a Wonderful Life. When I was a kid, that was a yes, we would watch that every year. But that is no longer one of our traditional holiday movies. We've got a few, but one of them that I think is arguably one of the best Christmas movies.
Die Hard?
Christmas Story?
The Ref.
Ah, yes.
Because if you grew up in a family, chances are it was dysfunctional.
Oh, yes. No, I knew these people. These were family.
Excuse me. The corpse still has the floor. It's one of the best lines.
Great movie. We've been going on for quite a bit. Can I ask David? I request it because there is a hopefully is going to the Supreme Court. It's certainly on the docket to be at least discussed. But the New York State Pistol and Rifle Association Supreme Court case. Can you give us a rundown of it just so we have a reference for when it comes up in the news?
Yes. Okay. So this is the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus the City of New York regarding New York City's ban on transporting licensed, locked, and unloaded handguns from New York City to a home or a shooting range outside New York City. That is currently illegal. Well, sort of. It's New York. It's New York. Don't try to make any sense out of this.
Oh. Isn't that protected by FOPA?
No, it's the same within the same state.
Yep.
Well,
FOPA is interstate travel.
So the reason about the legality, because David doesn't want to touch this, is that New York City didn't want to get it smacked down because they knew they would lose. So they basically quietly repealed the law, and they said, well, okay, the law is in effect. We're safe. We're on base. Don't prosecute us. And the people filing the lawsuit said, no, I don't think
so. There are still people in jail for this, so that doesn't count.
Well, there's also the fact that this is blatantly unconstitutional, and if we let you get a free pass, there's nothing that's going to stop you from implementing it later. So no, we are going to kick you while you're down, thanks.
Right.
And that was the whole part about the mootness hearing they had recently, which I will then let you take.
They've done it twice recently, but this one particularly, now this application process, this goes back, the first reference on SCOTUS blog is June 20th, 2018. And, you know, amici curiae briefs started later that year. And then more recently, this is October 7th, 2019 is when this one was added to the SCOTUS blog. The respondent's suggestion of mootness is denied. The question of mootness will be subject to further consideration at oral argument, and the parties should be prepared to discuss it. It's been set for argument on Monday, December 2nd, 2019. So this is going to the Supreme Court, And I have a feeling the Supreme Court is getting a little sick and tired of New York, because the other mootness, and Oddball probably remembers this one, was gravity knives.
Yes.
Because New York City had a law on the books, and New York State actually had this law as well. New York City just simply mirrored, but New York State,
not quite.
It was a law in New York State.
Had it, and New York City interpreted it differently.
Right. New York City basically interpreted it was any knife that you can open with one hand in any manner, no matter how many tries it takes, is a gravity knife. And if the first officer can't do it, we can hand it to a second officer and see if he can.
Well, I think it's very telling that when you look at the filings of amicus curiae, the people who filed in support of NYSERPA, well, in addition to pink pistols, when it says the United States of America.
Yes, that is the current administration in the White House.
Yeah, I mean, when the federal government is testifying against New York, that's when you go, ooh, it's going to sting.
Yeah. I mean, looking at this one batch of Friend of the Court briefs, National African American Gun Association, Pink Pistols, Madison Society Foundation, Academics for the Second Amendment, Second Amendment Law Professors, Giffords Brady, Commonwealth Second Amendment Inc., Cato Institute, Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence, NRA, Liberal Gun Club, the State of Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, when you get the NRA and the LGC to agree on something, wow. Yeah.
Black Guns Matter, California Rifle and Pistol Association, Professors of Second Amendment Law. It just keeps on going. Gun Owners of America, there they are. National Sheriffs Association. And that's just mid-May.
Yeah, and when you get it to where the city of New York goes, oh, okay, you're right, we've gone too far, we'll get rid of that law, can we drop it? We've done what the point of this, what these people were wanting us to do and got rid of the law. We'll just go away. And SCOTUS goes, No, you come back here and we're going to hash this out.
No, we must cleanse you with holy fire.
You stand your ground and take your beating like a man. But yeah, I was just reading through the Friend of the Court collection. I mean, because of course, you know, Every Town for Gun Safety, Americans Against Gun Violence, the usual suspects there, just like the NRA and GOA on the other side. But I mean, you've got pro-gun organizations from every single political stance. Everyone. I said yeah. Sheriff's Association, not Serifs.
That's what you meant to say.
That's definitely what you did say.
Well, it'll be on the blooper reel then.
Well, at least we're on the side of the angels.
Yes. That would be awesome if the National Seraphim Association was in there.
So, needless to say, the Second Amendment is on the side of angels.
Yes. But New York City and New York State, for that matter, pretty much did the same thing with gravity knives. And I believe that the state legislature had three times voted to repeal that section of law, and twice Governor Cuomo vetoed it.
And you are correct.
The third time, it was a unanimous vote. Now, does anybody know the last time the New York State Legislature had a unanimous vote on any bill?
Was it prior to the Civil War?
It was prior to the Revolutionary War. It's never happened.
And when Governor Cuomo gave his speech about signing it, it was very much petulant child. Well, I didn't want to sign this, but he actually said the legal climate has changed.
Well, at least he didn't say they made me.
I'm sure that's what he said behind closed doors.
Well, I mean, that's obviously what he meant.
Or he could have vetoed it and just let him overturn it so he could just wash his head.
Yeah.
It wasn't unanimous. There was one person, one Andrew Cuomo, voted against it.
Now, that said, the mayor of New York.
Yes, I was going to get to that.
On the other hand. Okay, I'll let you continue then.
So the it, not just the mayor of New York, but also the police commissioner of the New York Police Department said, okay, fine, this law has been repealed. We will not enforce it. However, there is a regulation in for the MTA, the Metro Transit Authority, that mirrors that law. That is a city law that has not been repealed, so we're going to keep enforcing this on the subways and buses. Yeah. So I can go to New York City to visit with my non-gravity knife by any other definition. You know, I've got an older Kershaw and Oddball, you know the one.
Yes, and I was thinking I had seen a good replacement for it, and I forgot to share it with you, and I need to look that up.
Yes, please. Yes, please. But literally, this knife is, it's barely a one-hand opening knife because there's no spring action. If you don't get enough leverage, that blade doesn't come open all, and it just hangs there. But I can go to New York City with that now, but if I set foot on any mass transit, so a bus or a subway, I can get grabbed by an MTA cop and arrested for a knife that is perfectly legal within the city and state of New York, city, county, and state of New York. So the Supreme Court is, I think, getting a little pissed at New York.
I mean, apparently yes. So, because this is the first Second Amendment case to reach the Supreme Court in a long time.
I think the last one was McDonald, wasn't it? McDonald versus City of Chicago?
That's what I think so,
yeah.
Which was the one that applied Heller to the states. Basically, it 14th Amendment, the Second Amendment.
Yeah, it was just Heller Part 2. It was a pretty quick case as far as my understanding goes.
Yeah, well, it didn't hurt that just lost the word. Accuser? The
plaintiff?
Plaintiff, thank you. Plaintiff was the word I was looking for. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Brain, we've had good times. But the plaintiff was a senior citizen and an African American with a basically pristine record, mm-hmm. who just wanted to defend himself in a very bad neighborhood.
So, hang on. Wellawant here is showing me a book titled An Act of Bravery by Otis McDonald. And it is autographed by him and signed with Wellawant's real name. That's really nice. Neat.
No, I actually got to meet him in Springfield, Illinois at the yearly iGold gathering that they have there. Mm-hmm. And that was a really interesting experience. And he was a very soft-spoken, very open, common kind of a guy, just didn't feel like he did anything special kind of a thing.
Nice.
Man, that was my impression of meeting Dick Heller. Like, literally, like, didn't even mean to. I was talking to Rick Ector, Mr. Ector of Charter Arms, and evidently Dick Heller is a good friend of his, and Dick Heller just comes in and just starts breaking his balls right in front of me, just teasing him and razzing him about,
like friends will.
I keep telling you every year to make this revolver that I want, and you never make it. What are you doing? And I'm just like, holy crap, you're Dick Heller. And he's just like, yeah, whatever, I'm Dick Heller. Yeah, that's who I am.
Like, and?
No, don't you know who you are? And yeah, literally, kind of like I started making references to Heller versus DC. And he just wouldn't even acknowledge, like, he just was pretending like I wasn't there. He was talking, he wasn't ignoring me. He was talking to me and being very, very nice and friendly, but just didn't want to acknowledge that contribution. Yeah, he was there to have fun.
Yeah. Like, don't you know who you are? Yep. You're the guy with it. Yep.
And unfortunately, for those that don't know, Otis McDonald has since passed away. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, well, I mean, you got an opportunity done, that many of us never. Home.
One at a time, yeah. Boys. Weird finish up.
Yeah, I just said Owellawant has had an opportunity that many of us will never have, uh-huh. at meeting him and just giving his thanks to his contribution to the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm. And David, what were you going to say?
His work here was done, so he went home.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so I think we've got plenty of time, but Oddball, you posted something in chat above the picture of the very, very good CRKT knife that I think we need to address, because I actually hadn't heard this.
Yeah. So apparently the NRA has sent out to anybody who still has a subscription to their carry guard service that they have canceled. They are no longer in the business of the carry guard stuff.
Well, I mean, didn't we know this was coming when Lockton and Chubb and whoever dropped them? I'm honestly surprised it's taken them this long.
It was very much writing on the wall, but it is official. Carry guard is dead.
I'd be very curious to how many people they had to send notice to.
From what I've heard, not a huge...
three of them.
Yeah, given that there are a bunch of different concealed carry insurance groups.
Yeah.
I mean, there's USCCA,
U.S. Law Shield, there's Second Call.
Right.
There's another one.
From what I've heard, the number of people who got carry guard is more than the number of subscribers to Newsweek, but I don't think a whole lot more.
Ooh, shots fired.
So four. Okay.
Yeah. And all of them are dentist offices.
Yeah. And of course, I do feel need to mention the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network as one of those.
Yeah. No, I'm actually a member of that one, and that's the one I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I was in the same boat.
It's getting late. I'm wrapping this kitten up, but just the oh boy. I mean,
what are you doing to that poor pussy? You said kitten.
Yes.
I wonder if that means that the USCCA will have a booth at NRAM this year.
Is there going to be an NRAM?
Well, I mean,
I think for sure there's going to be one, because the check is probably already cleared.
I was going to say they've already reserved the convention center.
Okay.
Yeah, I am very, very skeptical on the one after this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, ACLDN has had a booth for the last couple of years.
Yeah. They never got any flack from NRA for whatever reason.
Yeah. 2 years ago, USCCA was disinvited for having a booth.
Mm-hmm. Basically, their booth reservation was canceled for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally, Beth Alcazar showed up to work at the booth and just went, oh, I guess I'm just here hanging out with you guys.
Yeah. But yeah, they were told that they weren't going to have a booth. And coincidentally, the NRA announced that they were going to have this carry guard stuff.
You know, it's actually worse than that. I shall not name names, but I have friends within the USCCA, and I was not told this by Beth. Beth is clear. But apparently, the NRA was very curious as to how the USCCA worked and did their insurance, and so the USCCA people brought them in, showed them, demonstrated the models. To make an analogy, because I don't really understand how this worked, it was like what happened in the Cold War when, you know, the Soviet ambassadors would tour a building where they were manufacturing things, and they would wear special shoes to pick up the shavings of the metal so that the Soviet scientists could then reverse engineer the aircraft alloys. Only it was far more blatant. The NRA people observed everything, basically copied all the notes. And according to this source, I want to make this clear, I'm merely reporting the hearsay, the NRA basically stole great chunks of USCCA's model.
Oh, so they did what Microsoft used to do to WordPerfect and other. Yeah.
Everybody. If we can't buy them, we'll copy them.
Unlike all those other ones, when Carry Guard came out, it was a vastly inferior product to all the other groups that we just mentioned.
Like Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, I would turn around and say, of all the carry insurance that's out there, some are, you know, some are better than others. You know, I am a member of the Armed Citizen Legal Defense League, and I speak very, very highly of USCCA. You can do the math of there's some other ones that honestly I don't know enough about to go through. There are a few others that I am a little bit suspect of the product that they provide. Then there's Carry Guard, which is the why are you doing this?
Yeah. And so, for those of you who don't know what David and I were talking about with Microsoft, at one point Microsoft would literally hire out consultants to companies so that the company could, it's like, oh, you have this nifty feature that you want to include in your program. Okay, cool. We'll hire out this consultant that'll tell you how you can do that and make it work under Windows and hook into our stuff. And that consultant would go and take notes on, and oftentimes it was the competitor, you know, the competition's,
or a company that was offering software that Microsoft didn't have an equivalent of.
Right. Or there were several times that it was, like I said, specifically WordPerfect and, you know, or a spreadsheet company or whatever. And
Lotus, that consultant
would then go back to Microsoft, and surprise, surprise, Microsoft would always manage to get those features would just spontaneously appear in their next version of their software that came out, you know, a few months or a year before the competition came out with it.
Yep. And if for whatever reason that didn't work, it was not uncommon for them to buy the software company.
Yeah.
That's how Visio came into Microsoft.
Yep. And
Outlook and Project, and we can keep going.
Skype is the latest one that people know about. But yeah, I remember my dad at one point would listen to me and my friends say that Microsoft was this horrible thief of a company. And he thought, oh, well, you know, these are just snot-nosed little kids that are just bashing the big guys because that's the cool thing to do. And then he told me, and then I actually did some research into it, and dear Lord, you're right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some discussion that, and this, a lot of this is he said, she said, but DOS, Microsoft's flagship program that got them on the map, was their version of DR-DOS.
Yeah.
But from talking with folks who were in the industry at that time, the fellow who did DR-DOS basically, for whatever reason, stopped for a time, returning IBM's call. And IBM basically said, and this is from a person who was working for IBM at the time, said basically IBM said, yeah, we can't wait on this anymore. Give it to that Bill guy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was DOS.
That's pretty accurate from what I understand.
Yeah, I mean, one of the benefits of living on the east side of New York was there were a lot of old IBM hands around because Poughkeepsie.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for joining us for the Assorted Computers podcast. No, this has been a great roundtable. I appreciate it. I appreciate all of us for showing up, especially Aaron Paulette, who I did not expect.
Because you don't read your email.
But yes, so say goodnight to the people, Aaron.
Goodnight to the people, Aaron.
And we, of course, have David.
Actually, it was a pleasure to be here.
We have Oddball.
And actually, I have to get up and be at work at 7 a.m. tomorrow and be the face of IT for my company.
I am so sorry.
So you're going to get off the call and start working on your resume?
Well, yeah, Oddball doesn't wake up cheerful. And in order to wake up early and then have to go people... Ooh, this is not going to be good.
The public face of IT for his company. Please record this.
Yeah, yearly conference of some higher ups, and I'm supposed to man a table and be the cheerful face of IT.
Sorry.
Bring pie.
Oh, that is a good idea.
I wish.
That is a really good idea, though. Just
you'll be the most popular company there.
Right. Just get the little tiny, like the little tiny miniature canning jars.
Unfortunately,
that hold, like, 2 ounces.
And I live in the Southeast and work for a very traditional company.
You're further west than I am.
Get fired than him just trying to people wrong.
You also live in a region where moonshine is tradition.
This is true.
Yes, but it's, you know, that whole, you've heard about the Southern Baptists and Church of Christ folks. The best way to keep a six pack of beer safe is to have two of them. Because
I'm not telling you to have dancing. It should be fine with the Baptists.
Dancing is trouble. Booze is okay.
Well, only if they're alone. If there's two of them, then they can see each other, and your booze is safe.
And of course, we have very special guest, Awelowin.
Thank you for putting up with me and my distracting memes in chat.
Yeah, he's been posting distracting memes the entire time, and I don't know about the rest of you, but it's been distracting the hell out of me. But
they've been awesome.
They've been very awesome.
Yeah, he's like worse in game too. Like, I'm trying to tell a compelling story, and you've got an animated GIF.
And, was it more distracting than the stuff?
I'm not touching it.
Was it more distracting the stuff that I was posting at the very beginning?
Reading is fundamental.
I wasn't here.
Reading
at the
is fundamental.
And of course, I am Weirdbeard, and I wish you all a good night. And I hope you enjoyed this wonderful ACP roundtable.
Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.